Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are located across the main foyer up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So we always like to say that we're not here to teach, we're just here to share. And we typically go through a few paragraphs of the Big Book, and Katie and Patrick have graciously agreed to come and share with us tonight. So we're actually going to do step four for the next 2 weeks. This is step four, part one. Next week will be step four, part two. So before I turn the meeting over to Katie, I'll start on page 64. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Katie?
Thanks. My name's Katie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Katie.
I'd like to thank Graham for asking me to speak tonight. It's an honor and a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm really grateful to be here and to be able to share about my experience with the fourth step, and which is interestingly relevant again. I went over this yesterday. I'm working with somebody, and this is where she's at in the book, and we were reading this, and I was like, oh, we got through step three, and we've been going for like an hour and a half, and I'm like, we could break and like pick up next time. But no, because it says right here that my decision is going to have little permanent effect unless I launch into a vigorous course of action at once, So we went for like 3.5 hours and just like powered through, which was awesome. And so I got to talk about this a lot yesterday with her. And, up until this point for me, I didn't think I was an alcoholic when I got here. I didn't really want to be an alcoholic. I was perfectly fine being other things, but I didn't want to be an alcoholic because I thought I knew what that meant. And, I took a lot of time with my sponsor going through this book, this one in particular, That's All Broken, learning about what it meant to be an alcoholic and learning about the truth about my drinking and my alcoholism. And, you know, becoming convinced that I couldn't fix myself, that I had those curious mental blank spots that it talks about in the book, and that left to my own devices, I will drink again. You know, and becoming convinced that the only hope that I have is a spiritual solution. And, you know, I didn't want that to be the answer. I wanted something else because I figured if there had been a God, he hadn't done anything for me. But, you know, I was desperate and I was willing to go to any lengths to not to have to drink again. You know, so I walk through all of the pages that come before this and we talk about, you know, having an open mind and setting aside prejudice and then making a decision to turn my will and my life over to the power, a power greater than myself. And, you know, my sponsor explained that to me, that's, you know, the stuff that goes on in my life, what I do, what other people do, you know, how the show goes, and my will being my opinion and my judgments about that stuff. And I'll tell you what, I have lots of opinions and lots of judgments, and it makes absolute sense to me that a decision to turn that stuff over isn't going to mean anything to me unless I follow it up with action. Because left to my own devices, give me 30 seconds and I can develop an opinion about just about anything, even if I don't know anything about it. You know, that's just my default. You know, my dad was telling me recently that when I was in preschool, I just started preschool, and he dropped me off and he picked me up one day, and they gave him a book free of charge and suggested that he read it. It was called The Strong-Willed Child. You know, and that's me. I want to manage and control the outcomes of my life. And I ran my life into the ground doing that. And, you know, in reading this book, in We Agnostics, it talks about deep down with every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. That's in there, you know. And I didn't, that was the last place I thought to look, because when I go inside myself, it's not pretty. You know, I get wrapped up in there and tied up and bogged down in self-pity and self-obsession, and I feel useless and hopeless, and alcohol starts to look like a really good answer to those things. And so this is telling me that, you know, I have to figure out what's blocking me, because that idea is in there, but I can't access it left to my own devices. You know, liquor is but a symptom, so I have to get down to causes and conditions and, you know, launch right on into that action, which, you know, I was told this is the first tangible piece of evidence that I'm actually willing to do something about my alcoholism. The rest of the stuff before this was, you know, becoming aware of what the problem is, what the solution is, and making a decision to maybe try that solution, but this is the first time where I was asked to actually do something of substance about my problem, which is me. So, thank you.
My name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan. Hey, Ryan.
Coming to this part of the book, it starts out saying, next we launch out on a course of vigorous action. I mean, those first three steps and having to read daily with a sponsor and report back and read through it with him, that was vigorous action in itself. I hadn't read since, well, Cliff Notes came out, and that helped. there's no Cliff Notes for this book that I found or tried, at least. And so I used Cliff Notes all through high school, and so this was the real, only the only reading I'd done in a decent amount of years. And so I was already on my course of vigorous action. I got to this, and it was a little scary, but after reading what I had in the first three steps, I already felt pretty rooted in my attempt to get sober. When it talks about a personal house cleaning, I didn't really think that I needed one. I thought I was a pretty great guy. I had gotten sober for a year before trying any steps, and still wasn't able to see that I was hurting roommates over parking spots, arguing with people at parties, still going to parties, being a lump on a log and mad at people because they were still drinking and I was sober and they kept asking me what was going on. I didn't realize that I was not the person I imagined I was, and that came a little later. But actually, it came during this step. And like I said, the decision was a vital and crucial step, but it had little permanent effect. I made that decision, and I tried to stay sober for, I tried to stay sober, and it didn't work out. And it certainly didn't make me a better person like I thought it would. Coming into the rooms, I thought that just stopping drinking was a feat in itself, and that that was really all I had to do to be a really awesome person. And to get back the things that I was starting to lose in life. And that's kind of what it's talking about to me when it says that liquor was but a symptom. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So we'll continue on page 64. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about our stock and trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of a business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which had caused our failure. Being convinced itself, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations.
Okay. I really like this, these couple of paragraphs. I was reading them recently, and you know, my sponsor taught me that this personal inventory is not an emotional exercise. You know, it's not me trying to go back and feel sorry for myself or feel better than or feel less than. And she really emphasized that point, that it's a fact-finding and fact-facing process. I'm trying to discover the truth about the stock and trade. Some of it was good and some of it was bad. You know, and this line that talks about, you know, if the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. I have a disease of perception. You know, I want what I want. Things are important to me. You know, like the book talks about, like, my little plans and designs, and like in the 12 and 12 it says my short-sighted and unworthy desires. Like, when I want something, it doesn't feel like that, you know, and I fool myself a lot about things that have value, you know, my behaviors, certain relationships, things in my life that, you know, I'm either afraid of not getting something I want or losing something that I don't want to lose. And so I lie to myself, you know, and I learned that, you know, I lie to myself about drinking and what it does for me, and I lie to myself about the value of my character defects, you know, and me trying to run the show. And this was really about what it says, taking stock honestly and searching out the flaws that caused my failure. And I'm so grateful that, you know, this book has such clear-cut directions about this, because I could have, you know, give me a day and I can either be better than everyone, like I'm on the top of the heap, or I'm on the bottom. So if you tell me I have to look for the bad things about me, like, I'll just write a bunch of junk and overemphasize stuff, and I can't get perspective on my own life, you know. And so having the structure that's provided for in this book and the help of a sponsor was really, really important, because, you know, I got to find out about what things have value, you know, like trying to be helpful to people, trying to be kind, even when I don't want to, trying to act better than I feel, that kind of stuff, and what things don't have value, like, you know, me trying to run the show and manage and control the outcomes of my life. And, you know, it was sober like a couple of years when I was reading this, and I always thought that the different categories that follow this were just like, they randomly picked it. I don't know. I missed that line that it said it's self-manifested in various ways. You know, that these are the most common manifestations of me coming out to play and running the show in my own life, you know. And I have a sponsor now who just, it doesn't matter what I call her with or what I want to talk about, she just always reminds me, wow, you know, that really just sounds like another form of self-obsession. You know, and this step gave me three really good guideposts. They're my favorite forms of self-obsession, but I'll find other ones. You know, I get really creative when it comes to this stuff. But, you know, these are the big ones for me, and they're the things that cause my failure. You know, I get so wrapped up in myself over resentment, fear, and sex that, you know, you won't see me for weeks. So I'm glad that it's not an emotional exercise, that I'm just supposed to discover the truth about the stock and trade. You know, how do I act? You know, not how do I feel, not what do I think about myself, not what do I think other people think about me. Some of that stuff was on there, but it was in the second column and not the fourth column, you know, like, just, you know, the truth about my life and stopping trying to value things that don't have value, you know. Anyway, that's all I got. Thanks.
Right. personal inventory was not something that I thought was pertinent to this program. I didn't think it was pertinent to staying sober. I didn't think it was pertinent to getting to be a better person because of the person that I imagined that I was. And although it can relate to me very easily, I studied business management when I went to school. And so all of this paragraph there makes sense, but I wasn't making the connection between that and myself, even though the very next paragraph puts it in very simple words. Like when I read it today, I was like, oh yeah, I can see the resemblance of each one of those sentences. And then right below it is that paragraph that does that for us. And although I'd read through this and read through it with my sponsor, I hadn't seen this paragraph till today. And it's just one of those things that this book does. It's always explaining things if I'm willing to listen to it or actually pay attention to it. Talking about taking this inventory and throwing out the things that were bad, the unsalable goods, when I looked at myself before going through this step and getting to that paragraph, I didn't think I had any unsalable goods. I went to the gym regularly. I was busy with video games, school, gym, and meetings when I had time. And then I would have to read with my sponsor, too. That was another thing that made me kind of a busy guy. You know, being busy and constantly on the roll, it somewhat alleviated the things that brought me to trying this program, the uncomfortableness. But they only lasted so long, and those flaws ruled my life. I relied on those flaws, which were just me being cocky and not paying attention to the things that rubbed me the wrong way, the reasons I couldn't really quite fall asleep as easily as I'd like to. I didn't see them as things that I had to fix. I saw them as things that other people had done to me. And that's just what it's talking about, being convinced that self manifested in various ways had defeated us. And this is kind of where I started to get somewhat of a grasp on what that meant and how it affected me.
Go ahead. Great. Okay, we're going to get into the mechanics here a little deeper. On page 64, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, we found that it was our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with?
Yeah, the number one offender. You know, when I did this part of my inventory the first time, I had two full notebook pages with like two or three columns on each page full of people, institutions, and principals with whom I was angry. And, you know, I was looking at it yesterday as I was going through this with someone, and it's all like the same stuff. I mean, pretty much if you were in my life, I was pissed off at you, you know? Or if you had been in it for a minute, you know? And I was such an angry person when I got here. And like the idea that like from that, you know, mess stems all form of spiritual disease, I get that, because it just, you know, my resentment and it just owned me. You know, I was a victim of everything. Every person in my life had done me wrong. I hadn't gotten what I wanted, you know, because what I didn't realize is that you could give me exactly what I want and it wouldn't make me feel the way I thought it would, so I'd change what I want, you know. like no one is ever going to love me enough or do enough for me to make me happy. Because when I'm looking for it, I can't have it. And so on that model, everyone that came into my life and had the misfortune of caring about me ended up on that list. And, you know, I really liked this part of the fourth step because I got to write down who I was mad about, or who I was mad at, why I was angry. I thought this other part was neat, you know, like the different things that affected and why I was angry. You know, my sponsor went over things like self-esteem. She's like, that's what you think about yourself. You know, pocketbook is money and how you get it. Ambitions, I thought that meant like what I wanted to be when I grew up because I was really young when I got here. And she's like, no, those are the things you want. So that was like in every single one. And then my relationships, you know, she gave me pride too, what I think other people think about me, fear. You know, and I thought that was kind of a neat way of looking at it. But this part, it didn't really bother me so much doing this part of the fourth step because this is stuff I already knew. Like I'm a scorekeeper. I don't need to write this stuff down. I've got the catalog in my head, and just give me a minute, and I can lay it all out for you. You know, it was good for me to write it down, though, because I didn't realize how similar they all were. You know, I thought it was, you know, this person or this thing or that. Like, I had compartmentalized all of these resentments, and in writing them down, and especially then going over them with a sponsor, I started to see that they're all the same. Like, I had categories of people. Like, God forbid you date someone before me or after me, you're on the list. Like, you know, and it's just, I don't get what I want, and people get in my way, and it all kind of boiled down to that for me. But like I said, I liked this part because I already knew it all.
says here to me that from resentment, everything, all forms of spiritual disease stem from it. And my spirit was so rotted out. I mean, it's clear now when resentments pop in. And I can react to those a little bit differently than I did before, which would just be to get louder and louder until my point was well enough set into whoever I was talking to, and I was satisfied that they had had enough. Or when I had had enough and I was ready to walk away. And right after that, it says that we had not only been mentally and physically ill, we'd been spiritually sick. And in the beginning, you know, that's a third thing that I need to work on. Because in the beginning, it's talking about alcoholism being a mental and a physical sickness, and here there's another part to that that I need to start worrying about if I hadn't already, which I hadn't. But it says here that the mental and physical problem will straighten out once I work on my spiritual life, and it's talking about setting these resentments down on paper, and I didn't think I had any. When I was getting to that with my sponsor, before we even got to this chapter, I was trying to have a serious conversation with him, telling him that I really didn't think I'd have much to write there. I might be able to put one or two names down, but we could probably just talk about that, and I wouldn't even have to write it down. It's talking about listing people, institutions, principles, and I'm just like, and that's just an idea of how easy I can forget the bad things and just focus in on whatever's good and in sight. Whatever's in the rear view, you know, I can tilt that a direction where I don't have to look at it. And when it came time and I postponed this list that I had to write, I postponed it for 3 months, and finally, one of my friends in the program was just like, why don't you, what I did was write down everybody in my life, and if I had something to say about them, then I wrote it down there, and I tried that night, and that went on till the morning, and I had to come back to it the next day, And I had half a notebook written with just people's names and what they had done. And I didn't realize that those things were really connected to me, and I couldn't figure that out. But even though it lists it here, I had to get a dumbed-down version of this just so I could understand it. And it really put me in my place. Like these self-esteem, pocketbooks, ambitions, all of these things that it was affecting, security and relationships, those were things, I don't know, I guess I never classified them as those individual things because I didn't want to see my weaknesses. I didn't want to classify where I was weak because then I might end up talking about them to someone and then they'd know where I was weak. And I don't know. Coming through these resentments, I ended up having way more than I thought I'd ever have. And I still have plenty daily. Go ahead.
All right, we're going to continue on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more that we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived.
Okay. Yeah. I was very similar, you know, going back and looking over, you know, my sponsor had me stop after I finished the first three columns, and she had actually had me add a column where I wrote like how those things had been affected. So I had four columns of just, you know, their stuff, right? And looking back over it, I was like, yeah, they are wrong. You know, this world and its people are quite wrong. Yep. And, you know, I had no problem with that because I was a huge victim when I got here. I was a victim of people, places, things, circumstances, you know, just a lot of bad luck, you know. Certainly not anything I ever did. You know, this whole bit about maybe it was remorse at ourselves. Like, there were things that I had regretted, but I always felt myself justified for the things that I had done or said because, you know, if you had my experience or if this had happened to you or you had my parents, you'd drink too, you know, and unless or until those things have happened to you, don't talk to me about my drinking. And like, that's the kind of person that I was. And so I felt remorse. I started towards the end of my drinking to have those moments of clarity when I saw who I was and how I was treating people. But that didn't come right away, you know, for a long time. And you know, on balance, I certainly was more about how other people were wrong, and how could they do this, and how could they act that way? How could I have been so wrong about this person? And absolutely my experience. What happened and what continues to happen when I take that position in my life is that people keep hurting me, and I keep getting more and more resentful. I get more and more into self-pity, and then I start thinking that, well, this isn't going the way that I want it to, so I should just really try harder, you know, and I get back to being that actor that I learned about in the third step, that I just keep trying to fight and have my own way. You know, if only people would do it as I please, the show would be great. And I'm, you know, I was definitely guilty of that when I first walked in, and I just didn't know it, you know, and now I do it and I know it, which is even worse because I'm aware of it when it's going on and it doesn't feel good. But I keep trying, you know, and sometimes it's fun, it's interesting to me. I can use these steps as a way to do that. Like, these steps work so well. My life isn't going the way that I think it should, so I'll just work the steps on it, and then I'll get what I want, you know? Yeah. And that doesn't work very well either. Because it says, the more I tried to fight and have my own way, the worse matters get. As the more the victor only seemed to win, like, my moments of triumph are very short-lived. They weren't as short-lived when I wasn't aware of this stuff, but after I did that first inventory and I became aware of how I try to manage and control my life and how I'm, you know, constantly in collision with other people and I'm trying to live by self-propulsion and all that junk, like, when I know it, my moments of triumph, I don't even see them anymore, you know? And it's so uncomfortable because just like alcoholism, like this, you know, just like drinking, this stuff, for some reason, I keep thinking it has value. I keep thinking it's going to work next time if I try harder. And, you know, I find better ways to try and get my own way, like, oh, I'll work a step on it, or I'll just talk to my sponsor about it enough until I get what I want. And, you know, to the point where she'll say things to me like, I don't know what else to tell you. Like, I've given you direction. I'm like, but wait, you know, I fight a lot, and I try to get my own way a lot. And usually, you know, like I said, it's because I want something or I'm afraid of losing something. And, you know, I don't have a whole lot of faith when I'm doing that. And so I need to see just how detrimental this stuff is to me and how much it hurts me. And I think that's why there's so much of it in here, in this part in particular, because I got to stop pretending this stuff has value, because it's hard to have a relationship with a higher power and trust that he's going to take care of me no matter what happens when I need to have my own way first, you know? So.
Right.
So going through and coming up with that half a notebook of my life and the people that were in it, and how they had wronged me, I hear it tells me to be thorough and honest, and it's said that several times throughout this book up to this point. And that's kind of what stopped me from putting down the pen and thinking that there was an easier way, which flashed into my head with all of this work that that I was faced with. But that's just how well it had set my footing, or set my grounds in this program. The first three steps had really helped me to lock in and not give up when it got down to the nitty-gritty. And you know, it did seem like the world was wrong, that people were always wrong, and that if they had just done the things that I thought they should have done and the way they should have done them, down to the dotting of the I's, then nobody would have had the problems that they had right now. Certainly not me, most importantly. You know, and then it just, people continued to wrong us, and we continued to stay sore. But being able to write these things down and go on to the following columns, I was able to see that I might have cast that first stone way before they did anything to rub me the wrong way. I never realized how much these resentments were controlling my life and every action of my days, as people said something to me that I didn't want to do, even if it was my job. Getting paid to do something and the boss tells me how he does it, not even telling me that that's the way I need to do it, just showing me a different way to do it. Bagging leaves, for instance, when I was working at an apartment complex. Fun and games, he was out there helping me. He was like, well, this is how I do it, and it's a little easier for me. And I told him that he needed to go worry about his job and not tell me how to do the things that I'm paid to do. And immediately, remorse and resentment and just these bad feelings came in, and he went, you know, just... He ignored that. Well, he probably didn't ignore it, but he let me have my realm of leaves. And I had to go back to that the next day, and make things right, because it wasn't sitting well. But, you know, I mean, that's just how twisted I can get, even on that small of a scale, and it can ruin my week, more than my week, and not just mine, whoever else comes into contact with me. And it says that the victor only seemed to win. That was plenty for me. I don't care if it's just seemingly a win. It's a type of win. I can sit on that for a long time before that starts to creep up and pull some strings. Yeah, thanks.
I may die, but I'll win. We're going to continue on 66. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison.
Katie? Yeah, poison. These couple of paragraphs, a good reminder for me. I mean, it was helpful in the beginning to see just how badly these things affected my life. But, like, this is stuff I need to be reminded of today, you know, because I have a friend of mine in the program who gave me a suggestion that I found very useful, and the results were shocking to me. She said, why don't you go through the day and just whatever it is you're doing, try and identify how many times you are in the position of I'm right and you're wrong. And I did it one day, and it was constant. Driving down the road, what are you doing? You know, like at work, I mean, it's just, I'm constantly posturing myself in that. I'm right, you're wrong. I'm right, you're wrong. And, you know, okay, I don't generally carry the resentment with me about the driver on the road past like the 5 minutes I have to deal with them. But, you know, when I start doing that with the people who are in my life on a regular basis, it gets really messy. And it tells me that the only thing that I'm going to get out of this is futility and unhappiness. I'm going to be useless and unhappy. And that's it. Like, you know, it's kind of like the results were nil, half measures availed us, nothing. Like, this is all you're going to get. Like, no loopholes there. And it says that, you know, I'm going to waste some time. But that's not really the big deal. The big deal is that I'm going to die. Like, you know, for me, if the only solution it tells me, and there is a solution, that there's nothing else for me. There's no middle of the road solution here. Like, I can accept spiritual help or go on to the bitter end doing things the way that I was doing them and getting the same results. And so if I'm going to accept spiritual help, the problem here is that when I do that, when I'm right and you're wrong and, you know, I'm the victim and it's your fault, I just cannot access that sunlight of the spirit. I don't feel very warm. I feel like, you know, I'm over in the corner under the rain cloud, and if there is a God, he certainly doesn't care anything about me. And, you know, and I get in this trap, and it talks about, you know, the grouch and the brainstorm, and I always think of, like, Oscar the Grouch. And I thought brainstorm, like, when I first got here, I was like, oh, I remember brainstorming in, like, elementary school. We draw thought bubbles and overlap them and stuff, and that doesn't sound too bad. And my sponsor was like, no. Brainstorm is that rapid brain activity, that jumping from one thing to the next constantly. And I, you know, I'm guilty of that now. I was certainly guilty of it when I got here, you know, but again, through having done inventory and walked through this process before, I'm much more aware of it, and I see it happening. And it's just, I don't know, I want to follow the thought down, you know, and just, I get so spun up over this stuff, and I just, it drives me insane. And, you know, I can make myself really uncomfortable. I've been really fortunate that the insanity of alcohol hasn't returned, but I could see how it very easily could, you know. And I think the only reason that it hasn't is that it hurts bad enough that I say uncle before I get to that point, you know, and I have to go back and do the same stuff again. But, you know, and it says here that, like, normal people probably don't get that much out of this stuff. Like, it's a dubious luxury for them, but for me, it's poison, and that's absolutely true. It's like drinking battery acid, you know. It just eats away at my insides and erodes everything that's good in there, and I'm not useful to anybody, and I'm certainly not a happy person or very fun to be around, so not particularly useful in my life, but I keep trying it.
Ryan?
It's told me here, the number of times that I've read through this, that the business of resentments will lead to death for me. I'll end up going back out drinking or just getting so angry that I'll end up in a situation where death is certain. And even though I can read it here and be told exactly what's going to happen if I do that, that doesn't fix me. And I have to continue to work on that daily. And there are things I can do to relieve myself from these resentments, one of which is standing down and apologizing. And it says that the precise extent that I permit this is the number will equal the number of hours that might have been worthwhile. I mean, I can prolong a road trip because someone has cut me off or is in the left lane and not passing, and I will jump in front of them to slow down, to slow them down. And this was before coming in here, and I've come a far, far way from that. But I used to believe that that was probably the best course of action to get them to do what I wanted them to do. With a car full of people that were scared to death in my car, and asking me to stop, and you know, that wasn't really a choice. I had to get these people to get out of that lane because they were causing worse things to happen. I wasn't doing anything wrong, but I was going to fix that situation. You know, that's how an uncle of mine who passed before I was born, that's something along those lines, probably not to that extent even, that's how he lost his life. And I've been told that growing up, and that didn't change anything. My dad lost a brother to some form of road rage, and even if the guy had been cut off, even if my uncle had been cut off, I'm still out there going to even more of an extreme than that because I think I'm right. And that's all I have to go on. I think I'm right. And I can just put everybody else in my life, everybody else in the car, out of the picture and only worry about me and my plan that easily. It talks about the sunlight of the spirit and being shut off from it if I allow resentments into my life. And ever since I've come into this program, even before I accepted the program, I've seen that sunlight of the spirit in my mom and in several people, in pretty much all of you that are in these meetings. When I talk to you or when I hear you talk, I can see it shining through. But if I'm sitting there harboring resentments and stepping on everyone's toes just to do what I think would be awesome at that moment, that just puts a big eclipse in front of it, and I don't see any of that. I don't get to experience any of that, and I start to push people away like that and go down my own path, and I know where that can lead, and it's not comfortable, and I like to be comfortable. And even though some of the work in here isn't comfortable when I'm doing it, the payoff is a million times better than my route. And just being free of anger, that's a very tough thing to do daily. And it's something that I need to ask to be removed from me pretty much on the hour, if it's not a busy hour. Just that it's a dubious luxury of men to be grouchy and brainstorm. It's really difficult to turn my brain off. It runs a million miles an hour and in a million different directions at the same time. And to get the serenity that I can get from praying and taking myself out of myself, which kind of makes sense to me, that's the only way to get rid of it. That's the only way to have a somewhat serene day. Thanks.
Okay, we're going to continue on page 66. We turn back to the list. You got to have a list to turn back to it. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick, that we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Mm-hmm. Kenny?
This is probably one of the parts of the book that I spend the most time in, these couple of paragraphs, you know, and I had one of my sponsors, she used to take, when you talk about an entirely different angle, she'd pick up your notebook and flip it around, and she's like, entirely different angle, you know, and to see that instead of, you know, how other people have wronged me, that, you know, my obsession with that has owned me, that I am trapped in my own mind by this stuff, even if I'm right. You know, there's a possibility that I'm wrong, fancied or real, but that doesn't really seem to matter. Right or wrong, in my opinions and my judgments about people and how they've treated me and what's gone on in my life, it owns me and it will kill me if I don't do something about it. You know, and then here's the kicker, though, that just like with alcohol, I lack the power to get rid of these things. If I could just stop being resentful, I probably would have done it a long time ago because I wasn't really comfortable when I got here. And, you know, even after being here a while, it's not comfortable. And yet, when I don't ask for the help of the higher power that I found through working these steps, I stay in that place. I stay in that place and my insides burn and it's just, it's not good. And I can't escape on my own power. You know, I don't know, there's something about me that I just can't let go of being right, you know? And this, you know, my sponsor pointed out to me that every part of the fourth step has a prayer associated with it, and that this prayer is, I have to say it a lot, you know, that the people who wronged me were perhaps spiritually sick, you know, and I like that. Yeah, they're sick. But the most important part of this prayer for me is the two words in the second line on the next page, that they, like ourselves, were sick too. They, like me, you know, are spiritually sick, because it's not that they're sick and I have to pity them, you know, because there are words in here that I can just get right on board with, but that they're sick like me, and maybe it looks differently, and I don't like their symptoms and the way that they disturb me, but it's like me, you know, and one of my most compelling resentments that I had, it was the one thing that AA wasn't going to fix when I got here. There was one person on this planet who was not a human being. You know, he was a monster, not one of God's kids. You can all be God's kids. I'll get on board with that. Fine, I don't want to drink anymore, but I can't let this go. You know, and that line and later in the book, the story is like, nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Like, I just couldn't let it go. And, you know, when I finally did get freedom from that, it's when I got those two words, you know, that he liked me. There was something about that person that I could relate to. And even though it didn't change some of the other stuff, it just one of God's kids, you know. I had a friend tell me yesterday, like, I don't get to judge you because you sin differently than me, you know. They, like me, are sick too, and that I'm supposed to show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience I would cheerfully grant a sick friend, you know. And I've been to the hospital with friends, and I'm not mad at them that they're sick. I recently was in the hospital until 4 a.m. with somebody, and I wasn't like, I have to get up in the morning. How could you do this? You know, like, I sincerely wanted to be helpful to this person because she was my friend, and I was willing to self-sacrifice and willing to do things, and that's the attitude I'm supposed to take to these people. You know, and when I'm saying a prayer, this prayer about somebody, I don't want to do that. I got that direction recently from my sponsor. You know, I told her I was going to start doing some inventory, and she's like, that's fine, you know, do the writing, that's good. But most importantly, you really need to start saying that prayer. I was like, oh, I don't want to. I don't want to, because, like, you know, she has me say things like, God grant them everything that you need and everything that you want them to have and everything I want for me. I don't want people that I'm mad at to get what I want for me. I want that stuff, you know, and how can I be helpful? I don't want to be helpful to these people. You know, do you know what they did to me? Let's talk about this for a minute, because I can convince you how right I am. Save me from being angry. Thy will be done. That I don't get to retaliate. Oh God, I love retaliating. I love it. Like, I just plot things out and I get the best revenge. You know, I used to like take pride in that, like how intricate and involved and like just spot on it was. And I don't get to do that anymore, because I wouldn't treat sick people that way, and I might destroy my chance of being helpful. And it says, you know, like, I may not ever end up being able to be helpful to these people. You know, I've got some people I'm praying for right now that I probably won't ever see again. But at least, and this is a promise, that if I do this stuff, God will show me how to take a kindly and tolerant view toward them. And, you know, I've seen that. I've been praying this prayer recently about some people that I really don't want to pray it about, that I'm right about, that I'm resentful about, that I'm hurt about. And my sponsor told me to do that. I don't want to, but I'm doing it because that's, you know, it's right here. This is what I'm supposed to do. That's the action. And, you know, I notice I wake up in the morning and I'm right immediately. I haven't even opened my eyes long enough to ask God to direct my thinking, and I'm right. And I've been saying this prayer for a couple of weeks, and I woke up the other day and I had one of those moments, and then this other thought came in. You know, can you understand how this person might be feeling, how they might be feeling the kind of excitement that you used to feel in that situation, and that maybe they're not doing this to hurt you, but maybe they're just trying to, you know, find their own peace and their own joy. And I was like, oh God, it's working. I don't want it to, because I want to be right, you know, but I also want to be free. And the last thing I'll say about this is, this prayer comes before I'm supposed to start looking at, you know, we're going to talk about my own mistakes, but I can't see those when I'm all in the other columns. And the only way that I can get out of those things is to say this prayer. It's the only thing that I've ever found that works to allow me to set down my own judgments long enough to get a new perspective. So, thanks.
So here, I've gone through that list, and turns out I need to go through it again and start listing my problems, and how it really affected us, and what might have caused it. And it turned out that a lot of the problems that I had with these people were imaginary, and they used the word fancied. Just so what it's telling me there is that that my imagination could pretty much kill me. Just my imagination of how others were viewing me, or what others were doing to me, or how I was acting toward other people. All in my imagination, I could end up dead. At that point, it was a little uncomfortable, and I wasn't sure what I was supposed to do, but my sponsor just assured me not to worry about it, and that when we got there, we would go through that, and it outlines what the next step is, and how to remove some of those resentments, and potentially how to avoid those things. And coming at the world with a perspective that maybe everyone's got something affecting them, like I have alcohol affecting me, or my alcoholic mind, rather. And coming into the world with that viewpoint, or that perspective, changed some of the ways I acted toward people. As long as I could be on a spiritual plane that day, or for those hours that I was dealing with those people, I could attempt to be a little more helpful rather than the complete opposite, and just try and hit them while they're down. And I could ask for the anger to be removed, so that I don't have to create a situation out of them asking me for help, or them telling me to do something that I'm supposed to be doing, or really just being present, and me not being happy with that. You know, I can approach people a little bit differently. especially in my case when it came to traffic. And my alternatives to making traffic do what I wanted, I can now, it helps me to see that my solution wasn't necessarily the one that would eliminate traffic. It just, I can go down the road and not get angry. And I can get to where I'm going safely. And I can help others to get to where they're going safely. And by keeping in constant contact throughout the day with my higher power, I can avoid all of those retaliations and arguments that fueled my days before going through this step, and really to see where some people might need help, whatever help I might be able to give them.
Okay, I'm afraid we are short on time, but we have one more paragraph left, and this is where the magical fourth column comes up. That's not actually an example in the book, and where the kind of where this whole inventory process is headed. Referring to our list again, we putting out of our minds the wrongdoing others had done. We resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. We saw our faults and listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set the matters straight. Want to do a couple minutes on that, Katie, and we'll wrap?
Sure. This is where the magic happens for me with the inventory, because this is where I started taking responsibility for stuff. I didn't take responsibility for anything before I got here. And, I'll just say a couple of quick things about this. Is it says we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. You know, my first four steps says my part over the fourth column, and every single one that I've done since then says my mistakes, because it says here that I'm supposed to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where was I to blame? Even if the situation wasn't entirely my fault, I have to look for my own mistakes. And the way that was explained to me is I get to look at what kind of daughter I was as if I had perfect parents. I get to look at what kind of sister I was as if I had a perfect brother. You know, I don't get to look at my own mistakes in light of what you did wrong. I actually have to look at how I treated you independently of whatever I think you may have done, because frankly, I was wrong about a lot of that stuff. Like Ryan said, it wasn't real, you know, it was my own perception and my own self-obsession. And that was really hard, you know, to do that. But my sponsor explained to me that the hardest part gives the most freedom, you know, and I couldn't get the complete picture of this on my own, left to my own devices. Like I got a little bit of a window, but for instance, my mom had 5 pages and I had 2 paragraphs, comparing column 2 and column 4. So this part really came alive for me when I went over it with a sponsor in the fifth step and got someone else's perspective and, you know, got asked questions and asked to go into things a little bit more. And you know, it's funny, when I get resentful now and I start saying that prayer, this is the stuff that creeps in. And I don't always want it to, but, you know, thank God it does, because that's where the freedom is. So thanks for my sobriety.
Thank you. Thank you both for coming and sharing tonight. This was a great meeting. And if I could turn it over to a home group member, I do not see our basket. Maybe someone could help us out with that. Let's pretend we had a basket. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, and local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA?
Hi, good evening. My name is Lydia, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lydia.
This Thursday, 49th Street Living Sober is having a speaker. It's speaker meeting, and we hope you all join us, speaker, and cake for no reason. Cakes for no reason. So please come out and join us this Thursday at 5:30.
Thursday, 5:30, ODU meeting, 49th Street. Anybody else?
I got one. My home group, Downtown Young and Sober, is having a workshop on September 21st at 10 a.m. It should go till 12, maybe 12:30. There will be breakfast and a speaker, and there's a possibility that Uptown is going to help with that and have a speaker in it also. September 21st.
The Simple Actions Group is putting on a workshop. There are orange flyers on the table, or a mini conference, if you will. Bob D. from Las Vegas will be in town on Friday night. There'll be an open speaker. That's October 25th. And on October 26th, we're going to have workshops all day on various topics around living sober. That event is free, completely free, doesn't cost anything. there'll be a potluck lunch. And it's important also to note that it's not going to be here. It's at the Kent United Methodist Church. But it's on the Intergroup website. It's on those orange flyers. And we're really looking forward to putting that on for the community and want everybody to come out and get involved in that.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Announcements? Cake for no reason. The Simple Actions Group is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Would home group members please raise their hands? Yeah.
That's cool.
And just so we can welcome you by your first name, is there anybody in the room tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? If we could just get your first name, that'd be great.
Hi, I'm Marie.
Hi, Marie. Welcome.
Hey, Trey.
Trey, welcome. Hey, John.
Charlie.
I'm Charla. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Charla. Welcome.
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 All right. Delighted to have you. There is literature available. If you can fold it, it's free, and the books are at a nominal cost. Any home group member can help you if you need a book. Please don't leave here if you don't have one without one. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. All right, in closing, I'd like to thank all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at that Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial, because we can't figure out a better place to meet. It's awesome. It's a Mexican place, relatively inexpensive. They let us kind of fill up the place. We rearrange the furniture when we go there. We had 30 people there last week. It was a lot of fun. Plaza del Sol, 22nd and Colonial. Please come out. And is anyone inspired to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Go, Jason.
Hey, Jason.
Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as we trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Shall we? Jill, will you lead us?
Who keeps us sober?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Okay. Thank you.